This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Across the continent.
Despite contributing less than 4% of the global greenhouse emissions, Africa continues to suffer the worst impacts of climate change. Flooding, temperatures increasing, loss of habitats, and food shortages are all expected to worsen without imminent action. It is against this backdrop that the world leaders are meeting at the COP27 summit, where African countries are calling for four key policy positions. And some of those will be explained to us by our guest, Rendani Nenguda, who's a research associate and an attendee at COP27. Rendani, it's really good to speak to you. A big welcome to you at Power Weekend Breakfast.
Thank you so much, Bobby. Really good to speak to you too. And thank you so much for having me.
So give us a bit of insight about this backdrop that I've just painted. About despite this very low contribution to global greenhouse emissions, Africa is still paying the price for the world's wrongs.
We are, and I think the worst factors about it is that as much as we're still paying the price, most policies relating to climate change do not really apply to our context, but we're just expected to take them on, which means that the actual issues that we will be facing as a result of climate change will not be addressed. Mm. And so Africa will continue to suffer the consequences of emissions that they had no contribution towards or minimal contribution towards. And that's why there's a need for this African voice on this global platform. And this is why we went there, and this is why we made sure that we published our stance and stance that was developed by over 42 African citizens, experts, negotiators, just so that we know that we have a voice on that stage.
So if countries can cut global emissions to net zero by 2050, I mean, we've been told there's a chance to bring global warming down in the second half of the century and maybe avert global disaster in the form of what we are already seeing, heat waves, flooding, wildfires, etc. How does Africa fit into that?
The thing is, even if we do cut them down, we need to understand that Africa is warming at a higher rate than the global average. So even if we do get it below 1.5 degrees Celsius, you've already started to see the impacts of climate change.
Yes.
I remember at one of the talks, the lady mentioned that between 2010 and 2009, we only experienced 8 cyclones. Mm. From 2020 to 2022, we've already experienced 13 cyclones.
That's crazy.
We're only 2 years into the 2020 decade,
yes,
and we've already experienced 13 cyclones.
And we're saying 13 cyclones because that is far more than we've seen before?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Far more than you've seen before. A lot, and this was predicted, we're going to experience more extreme weather disasters. We've seen the flooding that happened in Durban, and the floods are becoming more constant. Mozambique is constantly riddled by cyclones. This is not a norm. And we need to understand that, yes, extreme weather patterns do take place, but the rate at which they're taking place on the African continent is abnormal. And I think it's time for people to understand that Africa is not in a position to mitigate or wait for the 1.5. We're already experiencing the repercussions of climate change.
I mean, if we're expecting more developed nations to cut their global emissions or their carbon emissions, rather, are we also expecting them to create interventions to assist where the impact of those carbon emissions is already tearing countries apart?
I think we're not waiting for them to create interventions, because us waiting for them to create interventions is what resulted in us being told to plant trees. I
Wow.
mean, South Africa, I mean, not just South Africa, but Africa is dominated by grassy ecosystems.
Yeah.
Why are we planting trees in grassy ecosystems? I think that's the first thing that comes to mind. These are working ecosystems. These are systems that feed many livelihoods on the African continent, pastoralist livelihoods. These are ecosystems that are home to vast biodiversity that contributes to these livelihoods. Planting trees in grasslands means you're reducing the water within the system.
Sure.
How does that make sense? So it's not waiting for them to come up with these interventions, but they have to finance the interventions, because
Yes.
we can't be paying for a wrong that we did not contribute to, especially to the level that the Global North has contributed to. And I think when we talk about this issue of financing climate change or climate disasters within the African continent, it is not the Global North helping us,
Yes.
it's them paying their dues.
Got
And I think
it.
we need to change the tone when we talk about climate finance. This is someone paying their dues for a wreck that they have caused. Because I think now there's this tone of Africa needing the help, and because it almost seems like a charity case, people are dragging their feet when it comes to it. And once it's understood and the language is changed to you need to pay your dues for the damage that you've caused, then we might see speedier interventions in terms of the finance coming in to address the impacts you're already seeing and the possible projected impacts that have already been determined by brilliant scientists on the African continent.
So that's very interesting. What kind of agreements and recommendations have come out of this?
I think one thing that Africa is going forward with when it comes to the negotiations, which will officially start taking place next week, is that mitigation is not our focus, because most of the policy that's in place expects mitigation strategies coming from the African continent. We have two focuses, and that's on adaptation. We have no choice, but we need to build adaptation strategies that apply to our context. And the second one is on loss and damages. We already see the repercussions of climate change and the extreme weather patterns, and they've resulted in irreversible loss and damages for livelihoods on the continent, for businesses, so on and so forth. So we need to develop finance models to fund these loss and damages and to fund the repairs for these loss and damages that the continent has expected or projected to experience and has already experienced, because that's not part of the finance model, which means a lot of people are left at a loss in the longer term.
Rendani, let's go to the line. 0861 987 000. Raphuti is in Atteridgeville, who's called in, who'd like to engage us on climate change and some of these issues. Raphuti, it's good to talk to you.
Good morning, Pavi, and good morning to Rendani as well.
Go ahead.
Yes. I'm thinking, you know what, some of this argument, oh, we have coal, we need to be burning coal. Who is it hurting the most? Because the West, we can complain about the West. They have the infrastructure, their infrastructure is solid, and they have the capital to fix things when things go wrong. But look at Mozambique, look at KwaZulu-Natal. We're going to keep on burning coal, and then what's going to be happening? And then right now, those people are still living in halls right now, all KwaZulu-Natal.
They're still
And
living
then
what?
we. In a hall, community
Yes,
halls
because
and
of the
all the,
floods and everything that's happened.
because
Yes.
of the floods,
Yes.
still, more than a year later.
Yeah.
Ne? So we don't have the money, the infrastructure. Look, Hurricane Katrina happened, you remember, go US.
Yes.
They
Yes.
fixed that place within the time, within no time. they had their places filled.
But they didn't. I remember them. I mean, didn't Kanye West so famously say the president doesn't like black people or hates black people? There's a lot of political will that's involved in fixing a lot of these issues, Abu Draputi. So yes, I think we're on the same page in the understanding that, you know, more needs to be done.
Yeah, more needs to be done, Bobby. But the thing of we're going to take a hotline, no, we're sticking to our code. No, we're going to like pollute because they polluted, and then we're going to do it. Cutting your nose just spite your face. It does not make sense to me at all.
Very interesting.
Seriously. Thanks. We need to get with the program.
Yeah.
Green energy is the way to go. Often so we are doomed. And then I fear for Mozambique and places like KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape, the most vulnerable places like that. Mm. Yeah. Even Limpopo as well.
Yes.
It's going to be chaos.
Mm. That's true.
I made my point. Thank you.
No, I appreciate it very, very much. Rabuti saying, you know, we're sticking to coal. But how close are we from eradicating that completely from how we create energy and how our economy functions? Rendani?
Well, we actually are close.
Okay.
One of the big outcomes of COP this year was that the policy or the, I don't know whether to call it the working document for a just energy transition was handed in by the president of South Africa, President Cyril Ramaphosa. So there are efforts towards decommissioning power stations. From my understanding is that in 2025, Komati Power Station will be the first to be decommissioned and probably used for renewable energy.
Okay.
But the thing, the matter of the fact is, South Africa has great policy. We have one of the best environmental policies in the world.
Uh-oh, I know how this sentence ends.
And I'll just quote the minister herself, the Minister of Environmental Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa has the brains, but when it comes to the spanner, we're not so great. So
yeah,
we need to stop talking and start doing, because we have all the right documentation to do. We have all the smarts to do.
Yeah.
But we don't do. That's a thing.
We don't do. And
yeah,
it's similar to what Raputi is talking about. The fact that, you know, these floods happened and some of the violence happened and people a year later and more are still living in halls,
yeah,
speaks to a very particular kind of issue. So maybe you can give us your insights on what that issue is and how we jump over that hurdle.
I think the thing, it's complex, and I can't pin it to one thing.
Mm.
There's a political element to it, but one thing I can say, it has nothing to do with our capabilities, because I'm sure within your circles, you have such a diverse group of friends where you're like, no, man, this country cannot be failing.
Yeah.
just from your group of friends, you can tell that this country cannot be failing. It has no excuse to fail.
Mm.
But unfortunately, to a certain degree, it has to do with who you have in power. I mean, if people are led by their own selfish ambition and not the need for the people on the ground, it's difficult to get the ball rolling.
Mm.
We have budgets that end up not being spent, but the roads are barely roads.
Yeah.
So I think it's about the people in power, because it's not about the people on the ground.
Mm.
We are a talented nation. We are a capable nation. And I think it's just changing that mindset and changing that selfishness. I think coming back to self,
mm-hmm,
we are about, like in Tshivenda, we call it Ubuntu or Ubuntu. It's about the next person. It's not just about me. It's not just about me eating. And I think we need to get out of that mindset and come back to self, so that we get things moving and become the great nation that we are and we know intrinsically we are. Look, there's so many issues and you know them. I just don't want to go into a political ramble.
But the politics are so inextricable from this issue.
That's true.
Globally, and then, yes, locally, it's very important to make sure that these structures of destruction and corruption are dismantled. And you're absolutely right about leadership. But then, as we say, self. Né? So how do we start speaking truth to power? How do we, as just the regular Joe Blow on the street, start speaking truth to power and making sure that these things change?
I think as the regular Joe in the street, I'd like to consider us as the private sector. And right. I think the private sector would need to come forward. I mean, there are people who are taking the steps that need to be taken. I mean, this report that we put together as Urban Generations Research and Conservation, it wasn't commissioned by the government. We saw an issue. We saw that a gap needs to be filled. We understood that, okay, there is no united stance at this point for Africans as the African continent. How do we bring people together to make sure we develop something where when we get to COP, everybody is going to say, okay, I agree with this. This is what we need as an African continent. So it's about you in your respective career, in your respective field. Even media is so important.
Right.
And getting that message out there. And getting it out there correct, because I think often what is put out there when it comes to climate change is quite inaccurate, especially for the African continent. So it's about us in our own little transdisciplinary areas doing what we can. When it comes to innovation, whether you're a town planner, how do we innovate our cities in a way that they become more efficient? How do we do that? How do we plan for our futures? Durban is set to, like, is projected to be flooded in a few years. Let's be honest. Why are we planning for that? Are we planning for that? Our town planners planning for that? We also need to understand there are indigenous knowledge systems that we could learn from. Everybody has a role to play within this discussion, and nobody should be left out. You can learn something from your grandmother when it comes to innovating and how we can do things differently for ourselves. I think maybe waiting on the government is one of our problems. Maybe we need to stop waiting on the government and pull together with our different knowledge systems to make sure that we build a better South Africa or Africa for ourselves.
I mean, I really suspect a lot of it is learning and unlearning, right? That entire process of kind of unlearning the systematic turning away from, as you say, indigenous African knowledge systems and disregarding that. And also then in this kind of globally interconnected world, I mean, a person like yourself has a platform and can come on a platform like this and make voices heard. And the big hope that is often spoken about around this topic is how Gen Zs and beyond really get it. You really get it. And so I wonder, you know, how can this research be further supported? I know that the Oppenheimer Research Conference, you know, addresses these issues and, you know, creating more platforms where we can get this word out.
I think specifically for this research, we need, I think, first of all, we need people to actually read, to understand what we need as an African continent.
No, and you have to create TikToks for us. We're not going to read big documents.
We'll definitely create TikToks for you. That's absolutely in the works. So don't worry. We'll create those TikToks for you. Yeah. We'll create those 30-second videos for you. Yeah. That is highly possible. But just speaking on what we can do, I think there's a need for more African funders. Right now, as the continent, we're relying so much on the global north. And because we're relying on the global north, it often ends up in what we do being dictated by what is preferred by the funder. Yes, we're in a unique position as Oppenheimer Generations Research and Conservation to be an African partner and funder. but there are not many of those. So because there are not many of those, most research outputs, it's either the data is gone, it's helicopter research. A European researcher will come into South Africa, take the research and go. So there are data gaps that need to be filled, and there are people who are willing and capable to fill these data gaps, but the funding is the problem. So we need African funders, and we know they're there somewhere, to actually come forward and fund research for the African continent by Africans for Africans.
But there is an economic benefit to these funders. I mean, isn't sustainability and eco-friendliness and all of this the big moneymaker of the future?
Yeah, there's a benefit. Which funders are you talking about? Are you talking about the South African funders or?
Whoever gets involved in issues of climate change.
Well, if we're talking about who's getting involved right now, there is a benefit. But the problem is the benefit to South Africa, I mean, Africa becoming almost a dump site for climate change or carbon emission solutions.
So there isn't much for a South African funder.
For a South African funder, there is a benefit. But like, I'm just giving a context of it being a global north funder. It means that people are coming in here and planting trees to reduce their carbon emissions as a company so that they're not seen as the bad person. But for the South African funder, there is a benefit because it benefits their business. This knowledge benefits their business and how their business works going forward. This research is about thinking about how South Africa looks in the future. So this allows them to adjust to this future country and this future city and what it will need and that what they'll need for their business model as well. This also means an efficient South Africa, because research is not, we don't just do research for the sake of research.
Hang on, I'm going to interrupt you there for a second and go to news and headlines and sports, and then we'll come back and we'll just wrap up this conversation about funders, and then Thabo is on the line who'd like to comment as well. We're talking about COP27, hosted on the African continent this year, talking about African issues and the impact of climate change on Africa and what can be done. It's 8:31. Kumusha standing by with your latest power headlines.
Saturday 6 to 10 a.m.
and Sunday 6 to 9. Power Weekend Breakfast with Pabi Moloi.
Hey, Marike Lepanzola, ne? I love that so much. It just reminds me of who I really am. Back to my roots. Thank you, Oza. Good way to get into the final half hour of the program here on Power Weekend Breakfast. In fact, it's about 20 minutes to go as we wrap up our conversation about COP27. So back on the line, Rendani, we were talking a little bit about the impact that businesses can have and the impact that their involvement in some of these interventions is to their businesses.
The impact, talking about the impact that it is to the businesses, my thinking is if you don't know, you can't do.
Okay.
And if you don't know, you can't plan. So actually funding these research initiatives helps businesses better plan in terms of their way forward. What is ideal for the business? What business model would work for them in the future when it comes to South Africa or Africa, given that we're going through this evolution as a result of climate change. Temperatures are going to increase. What works for me as a business? What works for me as a company? Number one. Number two, I think the impact for the continent is us actually becoming independent and drivers of our own destiny.
Yeah.
And I think that is a very important thing. We're constantly talking about Black Panther, Black Panther. We have the ability to build these leading nations ourselves.
Yeah. But we can be Wakanda, is this what you're saying?
We can be South Africa, but what South Africa was meant to be, what Zimbabwe was meant to be.
Well, yes, this is that. Yes, yes, with our own technology, with our own understanding of our flora and fauna and what it can be used for, etc.
Exactly. And we have this broad understanding, but I think a lot of work needs to be done in pulling all that data together so that we actually build solutions and strategies that work for us as a continent. Like, I always go back to the notion of us being pictured as this hungry continent, but we have all these wild fruits, all these wild vegetables. Yes, we're growing, yet we're going hungry. There's a lot of doing and undoing that needs to be done on the African continent.
100%. Okay, let's speak to Tabo, who's in Brits, who'd like to comment on the KZN flooding as well as some of those issues that we mentioned earlier, Rendane. Tabo, hello.
Legay.
Keteng legay, Tabo.
No, hoblela ka climate. Bona bya nngoli. Ne tshwanetse re botisa ka climate ka April after Ntwena, after ona morwalela. Kana kwe weather report ere, it is not the end, it is the beginning. Let's find the weather report, or Rabia. So, Nabia Nungovela Batua Ronka, weather, climate change.
Ocho Juan, who were among, Tanzu, who were among?
Let's find the Rona, rebutis the weather report, Ka Ipre.
Hey.
Nabia Nunguli, who was a weather report.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Tabo.
All right.
Okay. I can feel Tabo's passion about saying it is too late. We could have made some interventions earlier. I worry, though, that we go, ah, it's too late, throw our hands up in the air, and then leave it to get even worse. I do understand his point, but what are your thoughts, Rendane?
I do think he has a point in saying it's too late, and that it's too late speaks to people still expecting us to take on mitigation strategies. Mm. It's too late, it's time for us to adapt, and it's time for the responsible people to pay for the loss and damages.
Rendane, we've got to leave it there. We have run out of time completely. You told us that we must read the research. Where do we find it?
You can find it on the Oppenheimer Generations Research on Conservation website, which is opgenresearchconservation.org. www.opgenresearchandconservation.org. And you could also look at our social media website for the links, which is Opgen Research and Conservation on Instagram and on LinkedIn.
Fantastic. We're definitely going to talk to you again very, very soon. And create a real kind of comfort in talking about this so that we have more empowered decision makers amongst us. So thank you very much.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.